machine. Indeed, you know what time it is. It is 4 minutes, 4 minutes past the hour of the morning machine, the machine that makes your mornings move. Thank you so much for making the machine a part of your daily morning routine. Part of that morning routine is every single Monday we come and we gather in Radio Land for the Power Hour. You know what that Power Hour is. What else would it be? Mental Health and Mindset Monday. Okay, you come here every single Monday and you've been doing it for years, and we thank you so much for doing that. And as always, we start that Power Hour every single week with the mental health side with Dr. Earl Bowen Jr. And if this is your first time listening in, let's talk about Dr. Earl Bowen Jr., who is assistant professor in social and behavioral science and the university counselor at the Cheney University of Pennsylvania. HBCU, stand up. He is licensed by the Pennsylvania State Board of Social Workers, Marriage and Family Therapists, and Professional Counselors. He is also certified in dialectical behavioral therapy. Now, Dr. Bowen has completed countless research and done so many publications that you know if he speaks, we are listening, okay? You got to have your ears open this morning and every single Monday morning. Furthermore, additionally, Dr. Bowen serves as Associate Rabbi at Congregation Temple Bethel, located in my hometown, and it is play-in and play-off time in the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. It's important to Dr. Bowen that I mentioned something about the Sixers and something about Philadelphia sports because it is important to him, so I make sure to get it in. Dr. Bowen, powerful morning to you!
Brother Rob, good to hear your voice, man. This is indeed, man, a blessing
to
be with you and to be able to talk to all of the people that are out there this morning about mental health.
Absolutely, and it is a great time. It's spring has sprung, and it's getting warmer outside, but that does not mean we shy away from the subject of mental health. So what are we speaking on this morning, Dr. Bowen?
Well, this morning I want to talk about trauma, something that happens invariably during the course of our lives. I want to talk about trauma in relationship to a word that we also use sometimes relating to it, and that's called resilience. And then I want to sort of touch a little bit on how that might relate to neuroscience, which is, as you know, the study of the brain. How this sort of powerful interplay takes place between the mind, in this case the brain, and our physical self, the body, as well as how it impacts us emotionally. So those are actually the 3 points I want to touch on this morning. But before that, I do want to mention, as I've done before, the basic limitations of my talk on Monday. So this is really general informational purposes only, and it does not constitute medical, psychological, or specific interventions for clinical populations. This talk on Monday morning is not a substitute for professional medical or psychological advice, diagnosis, or treatment. The idea is that it seeks to bring together medical and clinical, if you're dealing with things that require medical or clinical consultation, or if you're dealing with issues of anxiety, depression, suicidal ideation, or other forms of distress. My recommendation is always is that you seek professional help to deal and address with those things. Now, having talked a little bit about the limitations of my talk, I do want to talk generally about, as I mentioned, this whole idea of trauma, resilience, and what we really refer to as neuroscience, which is a study of the brain. So the objective this morning is to talk about how we can identify and incorporate neuroscience, the study of the brain, into our everyday lives when it relates to mental health, and specifically as it relates to trauma, and also to talk about the impact of resilience, and to analyze how we can incorporate these things together to help us to address this whole idea of trauma, which is a realistic event in all of our lives. So obviously we start with the basics, and that is, what is trauma? So trauma is a traumatic event in which a person experiences sometimes a actual or a threatened point of death, where there's serious injury, and where there's a threat to the person's physical integrity or self, or that of another person. So once you've experienced trauma, there are a couple of responses that are pretty common. One is this intense fear, that you become very fearful of what's going on. The other is the sense of helplessness. That is, not only are things happening that are fearful, but you feel helpless. You feel you can't really do anything about it. And in many cases, it's also a response of attachment. And that is that you feel, because of the incident that's occurred, that you really maybe have to have people close to you. So if it's a child, for example, you might find a child reluctant to leave his or her mother because the traumatic event has occurred, and there's this attachment for not letting go of a person or a situation in which they feel comfortable. And so when you think about trauma, you also think about, how do you build the sense of resilience? Because the object, from a therapeutic point of view, is to work with the person to help them to counteract the feeling of being a victim, in some cases being a victim of violence. And one of the ways you do that is trying to build resilience. However, in going through the treatment phase of trauma, there are basically three areas in terms of stages of treatment. The first stage is really related to safety and stabilization. That is, once a person has experienced trauma, the first thing that you want to do in working with that individual is to help them to feel safe, and also to help to stabilize them in some way or some ways. The other part is helping them to process the traumatic event. That is, to process that event. You can't really get them to process that event until they, first of all, feel safe, and somehow you stabilize them in some way. And then processing the event comes next. The actual final stage is really reconnection and reintegration, where you are now working with that individual to reconnect them back to being somewhat normal, although that's very difficult because a lot depends on the nature of the traumatic experience that's occurred. Now, there are several symptoms of trauma, and it's important to identify what those symptoms are. The first one is really anxiety. And I know I've talked in the past about anxiety is really excessive worry and fear and anticipating a worst-case scenario. So one of the first symptoms of trauma has to do with anxiety. The second symptom that you often see with an individual who's dealing with trauma has to do with avoiding people. So as a result of a traumatic experience, you may find a person not wanting to maybe even leave their homes. They don't want to avoid, they want to avoid people at all expense. It also might mean avoiding places and things that are similar to what has happened. So, for example, if you witness a traumatic experience or were victimized by it, and you happen to be in a particular store where maybe you were just shopping and, say, a robbery occurred or someone started shooting, you might decide that you don't want to go back to that particular place again because it reminds you of what happened. So avoiding people, but it could also mean avoiding places that remind you of traumatic events. The third symptom of trauma has to do with physical health problems. So a lot of times you go to see your medical doctor because, you know, maybe you're having headaches or maybe stomach or other physical ailments. And the doctor may not be able to find any specific thing wrong. And a lot of times those physical ailments might relate to a traumatic experience that you've recently undergone. A lot of times when you go to the doctor, they don't always do a mental health analysis of what's going on. But a lot of times physical symptoms can be associated with past traumatic events. The other area that we look at in terms of treating someone with trauma has to do with sleeping. That is, it's not uncommon that after a traumatic experience, you would have difficulty getting to sleep, restlessness during the night. And so sleeping problems would be another symptom. And then there are emotional problems that go along with that. Sometimes just feeling numb, sometimes feeling disconnected from yourself or from the environment. These could be examples of emotional problems that could occur that also could be a symptom of trauma. The other area would be memory problems. That is, you know, you tend not to remember certain things that happened to you, or it might just be memory problems in general. Some people relate to having memory problems as, well, you're just getting older. But sometimes your memory problem or problems might be related to past traumatic experiences as well. I'll talk about that in a few minutes when I talk about neuroscience. But that's another symptom of possible trauma. And then there are flashbacks that could happen. And flashbacks could happen at any time. But it also could be another symptom of trauma or traumatic experience. And then finally, there's this PTSD that we hear about, post-traumatic stress disorder. Again, another symptom of trauma. And so there's several symptoms that you would look at if someone came in to be treated for trauma. As I mentioned, anxiety, avoiding people and places, physical health problems, sleep problems, emotional issues like feeling numb or disconnected from others, memory problems, flashbacks, PTSD. All of these things are symptoms or could be symptoms of a traumatic experience. And so these are some of the things that you would look for and you might check off as you talk to someone who may have had that experience. The other thing, though, is important when we talk about processing trauma is to recognize the prevalence of that trauma and to begin to do an assessment of the prevalence of trauma, focusing on what happened to the individual and as a result, what could be possibly wrong. And also, as I mentioned before, we have to recognize that there are certain environments that a person can go into that could re-traumatize the person. And we also have to be aware of what those environments might look like or people that might re-traumatize. And so if we're working with individuals who've had a traumatic experience, one of the things you don't want to do is to re-traumatize the individual. So it's important to get them to talk about what happened, but when they're ready to process it. So processing is very important. There is a study, it's called Adverse Childhood Experiences. It's simply referred to as an ACE study, where they really looked at children who had grown up and experienced several areas of trauma in their lives as children. And what they found out with the study, and the study was done really over 20 years ago, but it's still, you know, referred to often. It's called Adverse Childhood Experiences, and you can actually Google that. But basically what they did in that study is they listed childhood traumatic experiences and related it to premature deaths, health conditions, and also mental illness, and then also drug and alcohol abuse. But that looked at specifically the lives of children, and how trauma as a child can affect a person well into adulthood. Now, the other thing I want to talk about relating to that is, and I'll talk more about this in a minute, and that is what types of treatment tend to be available for people who are dealing with trauma. And one of those that I've talked about, I'm sure, week in and week out, is cognitive behavioral therapy. So with cognitive behavioral therapy, it looks at the mind, the body, and also the spiritual part of the person, which relates to feelings, and some people will call the soul. And basically, cognitive behavioral therapy espouses that these things are all related, that they're all interconnected. And so what you're trying to do with cognitive behavioral therapy is to begin to get the person to rethink what's happened and to reframe it into other ways, beginning with cognitive part of it, which is based on the theory that if you change how a person thinks about things, you can change how they feel and how they behave. And so one of the things that is a treatment modality is using cognitive behavioral therapy. And as I mentioned before, the aim of all of these approaches is not to re-victimize the individual. And also to appreciate that persons who are coming in with trauma may have their own ways of coping, and to begin to appreciate and understand their ways of coping. The idea is to look at how they've coped with it in the past and hopefully give them other mechanisms that they can use to address it. Now, as I talked about a few minutes ago and I began talking about this topic, is that a lot of this, the goal is really resilience in working with someone who's dealing with trauma. And resilience is the process of adapting to a situation in face of adversity. So in face of the adversity, it's all about helping a person to adapt. In this case, adversity, a trauma, a tragedy that happened, or it could actually be threats, sources of stress. But resilience is the ability to overcome, and in some cases to benefit from challenging experiences. So what you're trying to help the individual to do is not only to overcome those experiences, but also to use those experiences to build character, and in this case, to build resilience. So resilience is something that is learned throughout a person's life, and there are ways to practice resilience. And so that's really the ultimate aim, is how do you get that individual to become resilient, not because of, but in spite of the situation that occurred. Now, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of these things are impacted in a way where our brain begins to respond, particularly to trauma. And more I'm looking at neuroscience as a way of studying the brain and understanding how our brain really drives a lot of our behavior. So what happens is when a person has been exposed to a traumatic situation, there is this part of the brain, it's called the amygdala. That's a part of the brain, that's like the alarm system in the brain. So the amygdala basically tells us that there's something bad getting ready to happen. So that's the signal in our brain. And it's also related to the limbic system, which is another part of the brain. And so what happens is the limbic system tells us that something scary is about to happen. And that creates tension. And this tension becomes what we now know is the fight or flight mode. That is, not only has the brain signaled that there's something getting ready to happen that's not going to be good, but it also says, I have to make a decision. I can either fight or I can run and get away from this situation. So that creates, but what that does, it creates tension. And that tension is this fight or flight response. And so what happens is these things that are happening in our brain manifest themselves physically in our bodies. So we might notice that we're having sweaty palms, or we might notice our stomach is really feeling to hurt or tighten up. We might feel that we're having difficulty breathing, we're out of breath. These are all physical symptoms that actually emanate from these things that are occurring in the brain. So what happens in many cases is that when an individual is threatened with physical harm or about to experience a traumatic event, once that event is over and the person is now brought to a safe situation, the body returns to a normal state. That is, it now becomes normal again because whatever that threat was, they're no longer threatened in that situation. But a person who's dealing with trauma on the really more extreme level, the body does not return to normal even after the threat has dissipated. In other words, the adrenaline and other stress hormones will continue to activate the flight or flight response. So there's no apparent danger, but these chemicals in the brain are now saying to you, there is still danger. That's the part that happens to us when we have to begin to deal with traumatic experiences that might require additional work in terms of therapy, talk therapy, or in some cases, medication. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes. But the other thing that happens in the brain is as a result of trauma, we start to see that the memory starts to really change. So what happens is the more a person is aroused in a traumatic state, the more an imprint of memory they will have about that situation. But what happens also is the more adrenaline that you secrete, the more precise the memories are. As those memories increase, you also reach a breaking point. The breaking point happens when memories get to the point where there is no connection. In other words, the memory system starts to shut down. So you talk to people who've had a traumatic experience, and you help them to begin to recapture what happened, and they had totally lost their memory. They can't remember any of the details that happened. At that point, the memory system has shut down because it has really become overly impacted by that situation. And so that is really a connection with sometimes what we might call PTSD. So the more adrenaline you secrete, the more precise the memories. But what happens is that you continue to secrete adrenaline. It's a breaking point that occurs. And that breaking point usually ends up in a loss of memory where the brain is really shut down and you've really blocked out what happened. And so that's another situation that is pretty common in talking to people, particularly after a traumatic event that happens. So the other part of it, in a few minutes we have left, is really how do you reintegrate the body and the mind? Because this is really all connected to our body, but also our mind. Now, of course, one of the ways would be through pharmacology. As you know, you see a medical doctor, he or she prescribes medication. You take the medication. The medication really targets chemicals in the brain. The person feels more comfortable or more amenable to going through their life in a more normal state. The problem with continuing medication is that there will usually be side effects. At some point, you might want to be weaned away from the medication. The other thing is really more in the area that I deal with more, which is really therapy, and that is thinking about the trauma, talk therapy, reasoning through specific triggers that may have brought it about. And sometimes cognitive behavioral therapy comes into play in those areas as well. There is something called exposure therapy and coping as a coping mechanism that might include things like breathing techniques. But exposure therapy could also mean, for example, if you experienced a robbery at a particular store when there were gunshots, you may not want to go back to that store again. But exposure therapy would be maybe you wouldn't go back to the store, but you get to the point where you could actually drive by the store. And then it's sort of this gradual exposure of reintegration, which is sometimes a technique that could work and has been implemented in certain situations. Let me just talk for the time that we have left, just for a few minutes, Brother Rob, about some of the techniques that are involved in treating someone who's had a traumatic experience. I've talked about psychotherapy, and also there's something called psychoeducation, where you begin to help the person to normalize that experience. And that's mainly through talk therapy. There's sort of this gradual exposure, which I mentioned earlier. Also giving the person coping skills. These would be coping skills that could replace maybe negative coping skills that they've used. So if their way of coping is, say, alcohol or drug abuse, then you want to replace those coping skills with other skills that will also help them to cope, but that would not have a negative impact. And so those are the most important things. And so I've tried to talk a little bit this morning about how the brain functions and how the brain is impacted by trauma. Mm-hmm. But in addition, I wanted to also emphasize this morning that resilience is a protective factor and has a long-term impact on traumatic events. And that resilience is something that can be learned, not because of, but in spite of the trauma. And this whole idea of talking about trauma this morning is to talk about not only techniques, but understanding neuroscience that can be useful as a tool for not only treating individuals who have experienced trauma, but beginning to understand what is happening and its impact on the brain, and how all of these things that happen in our lives, whether it's physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual, are all interrelated. And it's really the idea is to work on those things that can help us to overcome sometimes very traumatic experiences in our lives. So anyway, that's my little talk for this morning. I hope I haven't gone too far out on the limb with some of the technical terms that I talked about, particularly relating to the neuroscience. But I think it's important that we begin to understand how these things all interrelate. And in doing that, we begin to understand more about ourselves and how we are constructed and how we are, in fact, made by a higher power, which I believe is a higher power in our lives. But we are beautifully made and constructed. And understanding that is an ongoing experience and an ongoing journey that we have to continue to work toward.
Indeed.
So with that, I'm going to end, Brother Rob. Yes. Hoping that the day for you and all those who are listening will go well, and that the week will be one of peace and one of joy and prosperity.
Absolutely. And thank you so much for everything that you do, Dr. Bowen, and filling us in on what we need to know and what we need to hear about the mental health side. So we appreciate you every single time, Dr. Bowen. And you have a powerful rest of your week as well.
You also take care.
All right, take care.